5 is called to order. Welcome all of you who are here. And our order of business, before we go to order of business, explain a little tug and pull we had regarding the House Education Fund. And Representative March kindly contributed to it so that we could have a flowing discussion before we move in other directions. But actually, the original intent of the House Education Fund was to provide an assessment for the use of acronyms. And so I know we're going to be using a couple of those today. Once we've set out the acronym in full, we can proceed to use the acronym. But as so that we can educate not only ourselves but others, then that's very helpful. Cell phones is also one of the violative imposition of assessment opportunities. So if you have your cell phones on, would you please kindly turn them off? And Rep. March has been known to call down certain lists, and if yours rings, you pay. So, and then thirdly, tardiness, which I'm going to contribute that today because usually we try to start right on the dot, and we don't want to impose upon your time. Thank you very much for being here. And I think that's it. So, with that, we are going to talk very slowly because Representative Kitts is on his way for the first bill that we're going to be talking about today, which is House Bill 3418. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3418. And Mr. Keller, how slow can I talk? Would you please give us an overview of House Bill 3418?
Well, I don't know. Although,
okay, you go.
House Bill 3418 creates a voluntary assessment program to raise monies for public education, creates Friends of Public Education Fund to receive voluntary assessments money, continuously appropriates monies to fund to Department of Education for grants, directs department to develop criteria and award grants to school districts based on need. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and attached to the SMS is an -1 amendment.
SMS?
Staff Measure Summary.
Thank you. For those who may not have known.
Is a -1 amendment to the bill. And he's not here yet.
Yes, he is. He just walked in.
All right.
Okay. Is that all you want to say, or you just got to stretch on that, baby? Representative Kitts.
Oh, I had a question.
Well, you may ask it. Representative Dahlem.
The question was, when will Representative Kitts get here?
It is a moot question at this point.
You may wish that I hadn't arrived. Madam Chairwoman. Members of the committee, thank you for bringing back up the House Bill 3418. I know that you've seen the -1 amendments. I told you that I would come back before you with some revenue numbers, and I have done just that. So if it would please the chair, I'm more than happy to share the numbers with the committee. Unfortunately, I did not make 25 copies. If anybody's interested in a copy of what I've received from legislative revenue, more than happy to provide it for them. The bottom line is this. If nobody were to adhere to this, there would be no money raised for public education. As drafted, the bill could raise over $250 million for public education to be distributed according to what the bill says. So the variance there is $0 to about $260 million per year is what the bill would generate for public education with no new taxes. So with that, I've provided the information for the committee that I said I would provide. The bill is as it is, and the amendment that you saw to House Bill 3418 is basically it's a technical fix because the bill is patterned after what ballot measure 30 was. However, in the drafting of it, it was excluded joint filers. So it was just a technical fix.
So the -1 amendment includes joint filers.
The -1's put joint filers in there. This is single filers as it's written. So it excluded that in the original drafting of the bill.
Okay. Are there any questions for Representative Kitts? Okay.
I'll ask one.
Oh, well, Representative Roland.
I knew I wasn't going to get off that easy.
I have some questions.
I just want to go home.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, is this a tax-deductible donation?
My understanding is it is not. Maybe up for the first $100 as Oregon allows, but I don't believe that, and I could be wrong on that, Representative. I don't know the answer. If you'll indulge me for one second.
I was having a hard time finding it, too.
Page 2, line 11, Mary.
Is deductible.
From
both federal and state tax purposes. Thank you.
And
Follow-up.
Did you get a revenue impact on how much tax we would lose to compare?
I don't think the state would lose any because it's a voluntary assessment.
But if they get to take it out of their income tax returns, there would be a deduction which would cause the regular income tax to go down.
Revenue is not issued a statement.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3418. We will open a work session on House Bill 3418.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 3418.
Representative Dahlem has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 3418. Is there discussion? Any objections? So moved.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3418 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Dahlem has moved House Bill 3418 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Well, then, we'll wait for Representative Lim so he can vote aye on this as well.
34. No.
Representative Lim, we have committee at 3 o'clock today.
Okay. In that case, yes.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 3418 should be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
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 Sorry.
The motion having received the required majority is declared passed. We will close the work session on House Bill 34. Work session on House Bill 3418.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, most members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative. We will now move to a public hearing on House Bill 3162. Mr. Keller?
House Bill 3162 abolishes the Certificate of Initial Mastery and Certificate of Advanced Mastery, directs the Department of Education to contract with an independent educational assessment organization to develop and implement statewide assessment system, prescribes requirements for statewide assessment system, declares an emergency, effective July 1st, 2005, and there is no referrals, and as of this moment, there are no amendments.
Very well. That remains to be seen, then, I take it. Okay. We'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't want to quash. We do have some amendments coming forward, and Representative March is in possession of those, and I will be bringing some amendments forward, actually, as well, but they are not in my possession. So I think I'll bring you up in threes, even though you may not know each other. This is a good way to build relationships. So Rita McLean Malone, Doris Morgan, and Keita Tom. Whoever's ready first might proceed, and before you begin, would you be sure to give us your name for the record, and welcome. Okay, let's start over here.
Chair Flores, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Rita McLean Malone, and I'm in favor of House Bill 3162. Just briefly, I will give you a little background. My roots are in Oregon. I've been born and raised in Prineville. I have lived in Portland, but I, for the last 18 years, have lived in West Lynn. I received a BA elementary education from the University of Portland in 1977 and taught in Portland Public Schools for a number of years, taking a hiatus when my oldest daughter was born. Later, I substituted in school districts and was repeatedly requested by teachers, all the while taking graduate-level education courses. Later, I worked in a resource room in a alongside an educational specialist in a West Lynn school. My responsibilities included tutoring at-risk students and doing the testing for the records and working with the classroom teacher regarding these children. I also was asked to tutor a homebound student at that time and then asked to take a long-term substituting job. So from 77 to 97, I kept my hand in teaching in Oregon in one way or another. All of this is just to tell you I love my state and have made many friends in the field of education over the years with whom I still communicate. I have not worked as a teacher for a few years now. With regard to the education, Oregon Education Plan, I've talked with teachers from Marion, Multnomah, Crook, Washington counties, as well as North Clackamas and Centennial Districts, Westland-Wilsonville, and Lake Oswego, and Oregon City Schools. Most teachers who are unhappy with the Oregon Education Plan, which includes portfolios, Oregon benchmark tests, and the Certificate of Initial Mastery and Certificate of Advanced Mastery, are afraid to speak out. For some reason, their union has not gone to bat for them on this issue. These are good and well-respected teachers, yet they dare not speak out against the Oregon Education Plan. So I am here to share what is in their hearts and on their minds. As I talked to these individuals, there were several points that continued to surface. One, the portfolios required to follow students from K through 12 are a waste of time, a waste of money, and a waste of space to store them. Teachers do not look at them until they have to prepare papers to put into those portfolios and send to the next teacher. Two, valuable instruction time is lost while preparing students to take the Oregon benchmark tests. Three, these tests are poorly written and are not true measures of a student's abilities. For most administrators, and I'm not saying all, but most, put pressure on teachers simply to get results on those tests as opposed to educating the child. Five, neither prospective employers nor colleges and universities recognize SIN-CAM. It does not affect graduation from high school. And six, teachers cannot speak out against this plan for fear of losing their jobs. There are a few teachers I would like to highlight and quote briefly. A fifth grade teacher in Portland Public Schools, this is a woman I taught with in the early 80s. She later earned an MBA and went to the private sector. As her son approached middle school, she decided to get a master's in education so that she could renew her teaching certificate and return to the classroom. She did so after this education plan was in place. When she was faced with the job of preparing portfolios of her students to move on to the next grade with them, this was a time-consuming task, so much so that she had to use her professional leave days to work in her building on those portfolios while a substitute was hired for her classroom. A high school teacher in a Portland suburb voices several concerns. Even though she is certain that at her high school, the standards are being carefully observed and the results recorded, there is no one monitoring high schools, all the high schools, with regard to this. So the question becomes, are we sure that the tests are being administered and scored evenly? Just an aside, as a former teacher, having administered a variety of standardized tests, I can tell you that that goes straight to the question of test validity. If the test is not administered and scored properly across the board, the test results cannot be considered valid. Perhaps most disturbing to her, a woman who is normally open about what is on her mind, is the fact that she cannot let her identity be known when expressing her opinions about this. Just to take a little aside here, this couple are parents of children in West Lynn, Frank and Jeanette Viviano. They are not teachers, but they are parents of four, two of whom are in college, two in high school. I've known the Vivianos for 18 years. They have researched by asking specific questions of college admissions boards in Oregon and across the country. From an email they sent to me, I will quote the Vivianos. The SimCam requirements are poorly implemented, costly, difficult to maintain, and in all cases are not recognized by college institutions when screening new candidates. In my words, useless, empty exercise. From an elementary teacher in a suburban school, this teacher notes that the tests are frequently rewritten. This is an expensive task. She states this makes the public believe that the students are doing better, improving academically. In reality, it's the tests that are changing. Edna McLean of Gresham, a retired first grade teacher, quoting, "The more testing that is done, the more classroom time is used to prepare the students for the test itself. It is an expensive way to get questionable results." A teacher in Western Oregon. Now, this is an excellent teacher, and she has always held her students to high standards. I know this because my children were students of hers at one point. In the staff room, as well as workshops and classes this teacher attends with other teachers, the discussions often turn to the benchmark testing in Oregon schools. She says, and I quote, "It is an accepted fact among teachers that we as teachers have no say in the matter, and that each teacher struggles to remain true to the educational practices that are best for student learning and growth. Because it is necessary to spend so much time preparing the students to take these tests, precious instructional time is limited." And that is the end of the quote, but she has also told me that the test results, according to their administrators, had better be good. A teacher whose forte is teaching math, regarding the benchmark tests, says, quoting, "The problem-solving math test given in grade school years is not a clear indicator of the student's knowledge and understanding. The tests look like they are written to trick the kids instead of offering information about what they, the students, can do or cannot do." Madam Chair, these and others are friends of mine, have been my colleagues, are well-respected, dedicated teachers, and have shared their concerns with me, most with my promise of their anonymity. This Oregon education plan is a failed plan. Teachers in our classroom deserve our support and respect, not more busy work dumped on them. The requirement of portfolios is burdensome, wasteful, and useless. The SimCam is an empty exercise for students and for teachers, and the benchmark tests, for the most part, are poorly written and are not valid indicators of the students' understandings or abilities. And the fact that nearly every teacher I've talked to is afraid to speak out against this is frightening to me. There are high hopes out there in those classrooms for changes that seem to be afoot. My hope is that all of you will educate your colleagues in the House of the costs, the burdens, and the limitations of this program. I also hope that you teach them that ridding our schools of this expensive, questionable, mandatory plan is in the best interest of all Oregonians.
Thank you, Ms. Malone. And if I could inveigle upon your kindness and courtesy, I have to recapture a faux pas that I made. And that would be, I have two members here, representatives, who have pulled out of their other committee commitments, and so they will be relatively brief in their comments. Would you mind if I insert them before you give your testimony, ladies? Thank you. I appreciate your courtesy. So what I'll do, and Rita, if you would just step aside, I'll have Representative Boquist come forward, and I'll bring you back up if there are questions for you. And then if I can have one of you just kind of scoot back into a chair, and I'll have Representative Avakian. You don't both have to leave. You can stay. one of you would create a seat for Representative Avakian, or you can step in after Boquist. Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll proceed. My apologies. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my apologies also to these two delightful ladies to my right for the inconvenience here. Members of the committee, I just wanted to take a few moments to give you a little bit of historical background from my district. You have another bill before you that is totally related to this, and I think it's the issue at heart is key to the decision you're looking at right here. Back in the month of December, during a series of town hall type meetings with school districts, and I'm not talking one school district, we were in fact doing entire counties, and I represent 5 rural counties. And we're doing this in conjunction with the other members that actually touch up to these 5 rural counties, including Representative Olson, Representative Barnhart attended one of these, Senator Morissette, Senator George, so on and so forth. I raised the issue for the 5th year in a row, is if there's no additional revenue funding for education, what can we do to help? And every one of the previous 5 years, I always received the same thing. We need to reduce the number of mandates on school districts. And surprisingly to all of us in the December meeting is when we asked for the 5th year of a row for a list of those Chapter 22 mandates that they would like to have, and we said suspended, not eliminated, they came forth with a list. That list originally started in Benton County. It then grew in Linn County, went on to grow in Polk County, in Yamhill County, and South Marion County. And in fact, by the time December or January came around and Representative Olson and I were looking at this, and this was not our idea. We went to the school districts. They came to us with a list of items. We told them we're not in policy, but we would bring forth the potential of suspending Chapter 22 requirements. This list then went on to be circulated at my last count to some 68 school districts across the state, and we prioritized that list. And the number 2 item and the number 7 item that those school districts came to us and asked us to suspend for 2 years, and in fact, many of you have seen the material, asked us actually to eliminate, were the SIM and the CAM. And so I've attended town hall meetings at various school districts over the last couple of months in my district, and I haven't found one, I say again, not one supporter of the SIM or the CAM. And considering the fact that we circulated last count 68 school districts, I think it kind of speaks for itself that though we approach this from a revenue perspective ourselves, Representative Olson and I, that to the policy committee like yourselves, Madam Chair, that it sends a fairly clear signal that there's something wrong with the SIM and the CAM if some 68 districts that saw the priority list, were able to input to the priority list, rated the elimination of the SIM and CAM 2 and 7. And with that, Madam Chair, I will be brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Boquist. Any questions for him before he darts? Thank you, Representative Avakian.
Thank you, Chair Flores. Brad Avakian, House District 34, Washington County, and thank you to the two at the table with me for your courtesy. I'm glad that Representative Boquist spoke to the financial side of this, and I'm sure you'll get a lot of testimony on that part. But I'd like to speak to a different part of it. I hope the bill moves forward. I think we need to take a very close look at SIM-CAM and how it affects teaching within our schools. It's always difficult when you've got what is a reform-type bill in front of you after you've had reforms for almost a decade in public schools that led to the need for another reform. And I was there in the early 90s when SIM-CAM was first being debated and was implemented, and I remember those hearings very, very well. And those hearings really molded my impression of SIM-CAM and how it fits within the whole scope of teaching, even today. Much of the discussion back then, as opposed to being about how to best raise and teach children, was about how to hold the system accountable in a standardized type of way. And that led to many of the reforms, including the SIM-CAM. In the result, I think, has been that we now have a layering of programs at both the elementary and the secondary school level, not just with the standardized testing, but also with the portfolios, with the speeches, with the projects, the things that relate especially to the CAM, that find their way blocking students from having access to other types of curriculum. And what we see now is music, arts, physical education, health, a lot of things that used to be part of the core curriculum, even at the elementary level, being pushed out of the way because of this layering of requirements. What I would hope is that this bill spurs on a discussion about how do we best raise and teach children again. And if you decide that this is not the best method for teaching, then it's something that should be disposed of. I've come to that conclusion, which is why I urge you to consider at least this element of the bill very carefully as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Bakken? Representative Dahlem.
Representative Bakken, being here in the original discussions and hearing the promise, and there indeed was a promise that this was sound and good educational policy, how far short of the promise has it fallen?
Let me preface that my answer to that in a couple respects. One is that first I was not a member at the time. I was here as a concerned citizen following this. Second, I'm not an education professional. The last thing you should do is rely on my testimony with regard to how to teach children, with one exception to that. I visit every school in my district at least two times a year, not just during session but in the interim as well. And I don't just do it to take school tours. I sit down with the teachers and with the administration and I talk about the very things that you're talking about today. So I've molded my opinion not just on the hearings of a decade ago, but also on continuous contact with teachers and with parents in my district on this issue. In my opinion, based on that kind of experience, I think it has fallen way, way, way short of how to best teach children. Not to say that everything about the sim or the cam is bad. Some kids come in and they talk about the experience the CAM has brought them in their lives. Maybe it's hooked them up with an employer in town with some type of an apprenticeship program or something. And so there is some good in it. But I compare it to what was offered in these schools more than 12 years ago when, at least in my district, the Beaverton School District, we had apprenticeship programs in carpentry, engineering, metal, woodworking, all the way down to the 7th grade. Those are all gone now. Every school in my district, every elementary school, had a full band, a full orchestra, and a full choir. They're all gone. At the high school level, you had all types of job training and apprenticeship programs, partnerships in the community that students could take advantage of, including a very well-rounded and very well-implemented AP course of study, which still exists, but not to the degree that it was. So, to what degree has this harmed? The SimCam is only part of the reform that caused the elimination of all those things, but I see it as an important part that caused the elimination of those things. I think it's a very important part.
Cool. Follow-up?
We heard from Representative Boquist that he visited some 68 schools. How many schools in your district do you visit when you visit each school twice? How many schools is that?
Well, there's 14, one high school, and a mixture of the others, and the smattering of schools and districts that are neighboring me that I also visit.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Avakian, you mentioned that as an observer here, from your discussion, it sounded like the legislature basically imposed this kind of reform and didn't really counsel to a great extent with professionals. Is that a correct assessment or not?
Well, from my assessment, certainly going back and looking at the record is better than listening to somebody's memory of a decade later. But I do recall at the time my impression was that the legislature was consulting with people in the educational profession, but not very many teachers, licensed teachers. And there's a reason why we license teachers. We license them because they are the trained experts on how to best teach children. And to think of doing educational reforms without relying on those licensed professionals for some type of guidance is a mistake. And I remember at the time my impression was that there was not enough time spent with the professionals in this state.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Farr?
Representative Vakian, the school districts that I represent have mixed reviews on SIM and CAM, so I don't need to argue that point. The committee's heard my testimony before. But following up a little bit on what Representative March had to say, I think that I'll make a statement and follow with a question, but I think that one of the reasons that the program hasn't been successful is because stakeholders were not brought in to weigh in on the implementation of it. School districts that, such as Representative Flores, my district, they've had great successes with the CAM program. Representative Scott's district in Canby has a wonderful CAM program. But laying that aside, it seemed that what happened was they rushed through the process without really getting people to weigh in on how the program could be implemented. And the districts that were pilot projects have had successful programs. So what do you think about this time around when we're in the process of instituting new policy? And because you were here during those hearings, what do you think makes good sense for us to do as we move forward with new policy?
Well, far be it for me to tell the Education Committee what they should do with education. But I think you
was
should
that a pun?
you should never move forward unless you have had good public testimony from proponents, from opponents, talk to experts in the community, in the field, and if you need to do pilot projects, you do that. On this particular issue, I have spent many years thinking about how it relates to the rest of the curriculum and the rest of the environment in the school, and I personally have come to the conclusion that even if there is value to it to some degree, that doesn't mean that there isn't something else that is of greater value that should be accommodated. And so even if you come to the conclusion that there is something good to be had and that maybe you want to spend more time examining it, I've been that route. My advice to you is let's look back to some of the great things we've had that we have shoved by the wayside for these reforms that I don't think are as valuable.
Quickly, Representative Roblin.
Very quickly.
Representative Floyd, I thought there was some type of a protocol that the member didn't have to go through a cross-examination.
Well, you would have thunk it, you know?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is relatively short. I just get at one thing in your testimony, and it tweaked me a little bit. I also have some real misgivings about what SIM and CAM have done in not meeting the vision of the Act. However, I would be concerned. I guess the question I ask you is, if we did away with these, it's not going to solve the problems in public schools with regard to having band and choir and all those things back in elementary schools, because there's also an issue, I think, just in general funding. And so I guess I want to get your point on that one, because I worry that we raise everybody's expectation that we're going to get away with SIM and CAM and all of the problems will be gone. And I worry, and your opinion on that one.
I would worry if this legislative body did away with any element of public school, such as the SIM CAM, without looking at it in a more holistic context. And I think within that context should be, how do we provide a well-rounded curriculum that is available to every child who has the ability to learn? And my encouragement would be to look back to some of those things like physical education, music, arts, and the building trades programs that we used to have, because I think they have a place in public education.
Thank you, Representative Lovell. I'm not going to look around anymore.
It's okay. Thank you, Chair Flores. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Mbakian.
Thank you.
Mrs. Morgan and Tom, I apologize for that, and thank you for your courtesy.
Oh, you're welcome. My name is Dora Morgan. I'm from Estacada, and I'll be just short here. SIMS and CAMS were put upon my two daughters, and it wasted their valuable educational time and my tax-paying dollars. They didn't need it for college like they had been preached to them throughout their school years. Both of my daughters are now graduated, and they both felt it was a waste of their time that they could have used more productively. And I am in favor of House Bill 3162.
Thank you.
My name is Keita Tong. I was born and raised in Corvallis, Oregon, with a six-year excursion to Portland. Went to Portland State University and got a degree in modern languages Spanish and German, and I took a very, turned out to be a very valuable class in German linguistics. I have four children, all daughters. They went to Fairplay School, which is on the reform became an outstanding school. And one was before the school, the 1990 school reform. One was right on it, the cusp of it, and two were in it. And now I'll start reading. Okay, please consider easily cutting state education costs by dropping the Oregon Statewide Assessment Tests, OSAT, and replacing them with a nationally normed test. It would save the state millions. It would put an unbiased accountability into Oregon's education department, though I am not a fan of privatizing every state service. Grading the paperwork from rubrics has been so inconsistent, the math problem solving has been abandoned. Grading SIM standards for speaking and writing should also be abandoned. The grading is equally inconsistent, and that's why problem solving was, as I heard, dropped, because students from the same class with some very, very similar answers, one would get a very high passing score and the other would flunk last year. Got that from the teachers. And then from a linguistic point, semantically, the concept of initial mastery and advanced mastery is a joke. Doublespeak. Mastery is mastery. Since its inception, the whole setup reeked of a job done by the semi-educated who did not consult experts. This program should not be viewed as Republican or Democrat, progressive or conservative. It should be about effective education, which it is not. Okay. It is time to abandon the certificates of initial and advanced mastery and the tests created by the Oregon Department of Education. These programs suck money from schools and do not provide or ensure the quality education promised. I got actively involved in education shortly after the 1990 school reform. And then I'm putting this one. Fair Play was an outstanding school, not a pilot. The pilot was in Cottage Grove. The bill dictated, 3565, dictated teaching methods, which was developmentally appropriate practices and team teaching. That got eliminated by Bill 2990. One of my children, a second grader, could not read. I found that out when one daughter told me she couldn't read. It was in February, midway through the second grade, and I'll give you those papers. I taught her using my German linguistics class papers, okay. Later, my youngest, then the second grade, could not add, subtract, or multiply in spite of the report cards indicating she could. I withdrew these two children mid-year and homeschooled. I enrolled them in a new school of choice the following year. I am an irreligious liberal who found herself in the midst of a lot of religious conservatives, and they were just as surprised to see me. Okay, so I believe that good, consistent data bridges philosophical differences by giving a foundation for rational discussion. I decided to follow the school reform results. The state did not have tests the first 3 years, so we never can have a baseline for the school reform. The first tests were given in 1993. The first results were published in 1994. Steve Slater gave these test results to me freely after a phone call. Requests for test data were freely given in subsequent years. Then it became difficult, requiring much badgering. In 2002, Bill Otte, formerly from the Corvallis School District, told me he could not get me the test data because it was on a computer in California and the state could not access it. This cannot be a misunderstanding because it was a 25-minute conversation. Then a friend was frustrated in his request for this public information I had been waiting for 4 months. I suggested he ask the aid from the Attorney General's office using Freedom of Information and the Public Interest. Since then, all my requests have had to use the Attorney General's office to get the Department of Education to respond. The Education Department never denied me the information. They never wrote back saying they would give it to me. They just never gave it. The letters from the Attorney General's office have been odd, saying that my request was moot because the information was given. But the Education Department only responded after the Attorney General's office inquired. Last year, I got a letter stating that future requests would cost me about $160 because I requested information not available on the website. And I have this all hand over. The 1994 Oregon statewide assessment states, change scores show the improvement a school has made over prior levels of performance. The state published scores for only 4 years, a short time. It abandoned them for percents instead of scores, meeting, not meeting, and excelling standards, DME. Test reports vary, making comparisons difficult. Since 2002, I have been requesting, and with difficulty, getting state data, test data, of number of students tested, percent tested in each grade for each school, in Excel in the state. I had also asked for a printed copy. The database is organized differently for almost every year. One person has asked me if the disorder was deliberate or from ignorance. At the time, I gave ignorance as the most likely choice. And I still don't know how some really highly educated people can keep rearranging things so you can't use it very well. It just doesn't make sense. Either way, the data gathered in and the data order show near incompetence for an organization established to track information and make reports. And I've got them printed out here. The information on the website is not consistent either. It does not have the scale scores anymore and only occasionally has school socioeconomic rank, which is a hotly contested thing in Corvallis. The website makes it very difficult to compare schools because each school has several pages, each needing about 4 keystrokes and a wait to see each page. Each page must be printed out to work on with the data, resulting in thousands of pages if one wished to be complete. The current presentation on the website is an impediment to comparing schools. The Department of Education does not offer test and demographic information concisely. Online information is difficult to track over time. Public information is becoming secret. I think this is because the proud belief in the reforms is being undermined by declining results. Rather than confront a mistake, it is being papered over. This is costing taxpayers and society. Because if you have uneducated people, really, it costs, you don't have a workforce capable of doing very much. And I'm talking about people that cannot make change and cannot multiply and cannot make percent. And I have a guitar store. Rather than test the reform with outside experts, the Department of Education, full of hubris, decided it constructs its own education and tests itself with no controls. Try finding a high schooler's portfolio. For my daughters, this is the second one, on the reform, 8th grade algebra class, she was asked to fill out the mimeograph form with little wavy lines for spontaneity. I am proud of this work because, she wrote, I am not proud of this because I did it all last year. This was precious. When she was in 10th grade, I asked to get her portfolio. I wrote Sheldon Middle School, Crescent Valley, and Corvallis High Schools. Each school wrote that the portfolio was at another school. The portfolio disappeared. They threw it out and wouldn't admit it, okay? The class time, teacher, and student effort was wasted, thrown out. The paper would have been better off at my home because at least I could have shown it to you. It shows teaching time and school money were wasted by going through a song and dance to satisfy the certificate of initial mastery. The SIM and CAM paperwork forces each high school to hire someone to manage it, at least $20,000 a year each. This cost does not enhance student education. When a school has $1,000 a year budget for making copies, no textbook budget, and the PTA working hard for every $100, $20,000 is significant. I have helped in Franklin School's classrooms file paper portfolio papers, graded English and math problems using the rubrics. Grading with rubrics is very subjective. One has to decide whether sprightly language is more or less important than missing some punctuation. Math grading depends on English, not on mathematics language. Department of Education and its... Oh, dear. Solving a problem step by step does not count. English does on the math problem solving. It shows ignorance by the Department of Education and its graders because they cannot understand math language, which is writing things out step by step. As my daughter said, it takes 5 minutes to solve a problem and 25 minutes to write about it. Understanding does not come from writing about it. About 6 years ago, teachers were asked by the state to give different tests to students based on the teacher's estimate of a student's ability. This limited students from really doing well if they are rated a slower learner or a lower learner. One year, the third grade math test had questions that needed information from a graph. To answer them, the state forgot the graph. Four questions of the 25-question test were thrown out. About 3 years ago, TESA was introduced to a Corvallis school that had many students failing to meet passing scores. The state allowed failing students to take the state test on the computer three times at any time, months apart. This gave the teacher and student time to work to pass the test and increase the school's score. This also put other students and schools at a disadvantage. The state could have fewer failing schools and show the reforms were working. The state test became less honest. We can do better. Contracting out to a big, comparatively cheap national testing firm would restore some integrity to Oregon's education system and put more money back into the schools. At Franklin School, the parents decided to test every year that they could to have accountability and follow their teaching. This is the school of choice in Corvallis. It costs about $10 for each student to test. And it costs, as far as, because they have consumables in second grade, and in the other grades, they get the test forms, the Terra Nova, from the Education Service District, and they reuse them year after year. So it costs about $5 to have them graded, but they don't have to buy new test forms. This is much cheaper than what I figured was around $76 a test that the state costs to test each student. And I'll give you my students' work, and you can figure it out from there. Yeah, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Tom. Are there questions for either Ms. Malone, Ms. Morgan, or Ms. Tom? Thank you very, very much. I also need to note that I have another person here who has traveled more than 100 miles, and we do try to accommodate that. Velma Hartwig, is it? And I will call up with her, Greg Perry. And I will call up with them, Juanita Lamley. Thank you, students, for visiting. You may go in any order that you choose, and please be mindful to give us your name for the record. Thank you.
If you'll indulge me while an old lady puts her glasses on.
I totally understand.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Velma Hartwig. I live in a small community named Harlan, which is in the Coast Range in South Lincoln County. I'm not a teacher, but I have many, many friends who are and have talked extensively with teachers and principals and first-line educators about this. And I have received the same answer from all of them. It stinks. A school's purpose is to educate children and in many cases prepare them for college. When considering SEMCAM or any other program, one must answer three questions. Is it beneficial? Is it cost effective? And who profits? First, whom does it benefit? The teachers I have talked with say it's a waste of time, interferes with their efforts to cover the subjects the children need to learn, and does nothing for further education. Colleges are not interested in volumes of meaningless paperwork. They look at SAT scores, grade point average, and the student's history. Second, is it cost effective? Is wasting teachers' and students' time worth $60 million spent on SEMCAM? I have the report right here from the audit committee. I'm sure that most of you have seen it. Third, who profits? Not the students, not the frontline staff. Maybe the bureaucrats who say, see, we have lots of proof our children are working. Look at all the paperwork. The best analogy I can think of is a weekly fly report submitted by an isolated radar station in northern Alaska. This really happened. The men were confined to the station because of weather conditions, but their job was essential to the protection of the United States, so it was necessary to keep them there. One day, during a break, the men noticed two flies on the ceiling. They developed a game: count the flies, identify the types of flies, and try to determine the sex. As a joke, one day they sent a weekly fly report to headquarters in the United States. This practice continued for nearly a year. The crew was transferred stateside. Several weeks later, the crew received an emergency message: where's your weekly fly report? Now I ask you, are we going to teach our children what they need to know, or are we going to continue the equivalent of the weekly fly report? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harper. Whoever would choose to go next?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Dr. Juanita Lamley. I have been a professional educator for 20-some-odd years in three different states. And I am a very firm believer in assessments and in assessing student learning gains in order to improve instruction. And I would like to focus my comments on a very narrow aspect of this particular bill, because I think I can concur with most of the other testimony that's happened this afternoon. When I was a vice principal in Nevada, in a high school in Nevada, it was 1,800 students, and I was also the state testing coordinator. The state tests in Nevada are high stakes in that students have to pass tests in math, reading, and writing in order to graduate from high school. These tests were given twice at the junior level, and then for students who did not pass them, there were opportunities at the senior level and then beyond if students didn't pass them. For the entire coordination aspect and administering of these tests, I was assigned 0.04 FTE, and that's all it took. And then I came back to Oregon, and I became a high school principal here, and I was introduced to SIM. And the SIM requirements for coordinating the testing, for administering the testing, for disseminating the information, for keeping track of the information, required 0.25 FTE from four different teachers on my staff. That's 1.0 FTE that was dedicated simply to testing coordination. And that is an issue to me. There are other ways to do it than what I have seen here. And I would hope that you don't get rid of the assessments, because assessments are important, but that you do find a better way to do them, because this system is not working. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Yes, my name is Greg Perry. I'm a professor of agricultural economics at Oregon State University. I have been at Oregon State since 1986. What I have to say, though, does not reflect, should not reflect on Oregon State University, because I come here as a private citizen. I am the parent, along with my wife, of six children who have gone through the Corvallis school system, two left in the school system. In 1995, I and a group of other parents and teachers founded the Corvallis Franklin School of Choice, and that school has been in existence now for 10 years, been very successful. I want to speak in particular to the issue of assessment. I don't have much use for SIM and CAM, but I won't speak to that today. I was given responsibility from the time Franklin opened to do the statistical analysis for testing. We decided early on that we wanted to test not only using the state assessments, but also another assessment that would cover a broader range of subjects than the Oregon State assessment used, as well as test every year instead of just testing in 3 and 5 and 8. Franklin is a K-8 school, so we were testing and have been testing since then using the Terra Nova grades 2 through 8. So I have spent a lot of time understanding, studying assessments, and my sense is that an ideal assessment system would have six criteria. First, it would cover the basic subjects and would reflect the expectations that we have as parents, as teachers, as policymakers as to what we expect our children to learn. Second, that it be done with minimal disruption so that we can proceed with the education of our children. Third, that the testing costs be kept as low as possible so that money can be used for other aspects. Fourth, that we have a system that's above reproach, that there's no question that it is done with integrity and honesty. Number five, we want it to be done so that it can be reliably compared over time, so that if we get a group of test scores from 1994, we can compare those with 2004, and we know that they're testing the same level. And last, we like to have a testing system that is going to allow us to compare our results in Oregon with other states, so that we know how we're doing as a state and vis-a-vis other states. Well, if I were to use those six criteria, I would say our current state assessment program scores reasonably well on the first one in covering the essential subjects. It does reasonably well in the area of minimal disruption, but in the other four areas, it's a dismal failure. Okay? First of all, the cost. Testing or assessments in general are a product of a lot of work. As an economist, we talk about fixed costs and variable costs. There aren't very many variable costs to assessment, just the cost of the paper and the cost of the score. It's very low. But there's huge costs involved in developing the test, making sure that they are the right kind of questions, that they ask the right kind of material, that they are calibrated to the right age level, and so on and so forth. Tremendous amount of cost go into that. That goes whether there's one kid tested or 5 million kids tested. The problem is that Oregon is a small state, and it's really difficult to justify spending the money you need to really do these tests right if we're going to develop them within the state when there are other state assessment or agencies or organizations, private organizations, that test 10 times as many kids as we do. And they're able to spread that cost across many more kids. And so their costs are going to be lower. There's just no way, speaking as an economist, there's no way that Oregon can test and do the job that you can do with those other tests with the amount of money you have. You can't do it. They have to cut corners. And how do they cut corners? Well, they cut corners by reusing test scores or test questions. Okay, so year after year they're reusing a bunch of the test questions. But that gets at another problem, which I pointed out, which is integrity and openness. Because they're reusing questions, they have to hold these questions to themselves and not publicly distribute them. So as a public, we really don't know whether these tests are fair, reasonable, whether they are being inflated or anything else. We just don't know because they're held so tightly. Okay? I happen to do some statistical analysis of our Terra Nova tests probably 5-6 years ago and compared them to the Oregon State assessments. And I picked up some very interesting things. I noticed that in particular in math, they seem to be trending upward every year. That is to say that the Oregon State assessments were coming up with higher scores for the same level of performance in the Terra Nova. Well, this kind of bothered me because what it suggests is that the test scores are being inflated and so that they're not really reflecting how the kids are doing. And so I happened to mention this to Rob Kramer, who's involved in the education community, and he asked me to do a more thorough analysis of those data, and I did that and published it on the web in 2002. And I'll leave a copy of this. It's available on the web as well. What I did find was that the assessments on reading for third and fifth grade when compared at Franklin School vary from year to year. It's kind of marginal whether it's statistically significant or not, but it's nonetheless disturbing that there's no consistent score year to year. Okay. On math, however, on the third grade, I found some upward trend, some inflation. In fifth grade, definite inflation in the scoring. The scores were going up every year, which would suggest that the tests were getting easier over time. And if you accounted for that, I found that the scores or the statewide scores were actually dropping in math. They weren't going up. Now, when I brought this paper to the attention of the Oregon Department of Education, they dismissed it on two grounds. One is that the sample size was small, and the second is because their tests cover different material than Terra Nova. On the first point, the issue of sample size is a very interesting point because the State Department of Education used a sample size only slightly larger than that to make the case that they should use the Oregon State Assessment for the No Child Left Behind Act, because they did the same thing that we did. They tested with the California assessment and with the OSAT and found that they were highly correlated. What a surprise. And so they argued with that sample size, which is only slightly larger than mine, that they should be able to allow that. Okay?
Numbers. Do you have numbers? I think
what,
that's the question.
Yeah, what's it? Yes. You're saying you're giving sample sizes.
Our sample size has been typically one classroom, depending on the year, 25 to 30 kids per year over 5, 6, 7 years. And it has continued to do that, or we've continued to add to the data set, and so it's larger than that now. And the trends still hold, although I haven't published them. Okay, in the state of Oregon, they used a sample size, I believe, of about 200 to prove their point that those two tests were correlated. So again, their sample sizes aren't all that different than mine. And so for them to argue that my sample size is invalid and theirs is valid is contradictory. The second issue they made, or the second point they made, is that the test covered two different things. As it turns out, I sat down with the fifth grade, since it was the quantum question, and identified all the five or so items that are on the in the standards, what we're trying to accomplish in Oregon State Assessments, and then looked at the Terra Nova test that we give to our kids, and it's the same Terra Nova test every year. And lo and behold, our Terra Nova has all those questions on it, or all those subject areas are covered. Now, the only question becomes then, what weighting of those questions? I mean, if you do a lot more computational problems and a lot fewer algebra problems, yeah, you might have some difference in scores, but the essential material is the same. And so it's very easy, for example, to put a lot more computational problems on more recently and kind of inflate the test, in essence, because you put on easier questions and taken off, say, some algebra or geometry that are more advanced questions. I don't know that that's what's happened, okay? I'm not going to say that. But I think the data suggests that it can't be dismissed so easily, that there is something going on here. And I think I'm not going to argue it's a conspiracy. What I think is happening is they simply don't have the resources to do the job right. And since it's already more expensive than buying tests out of state, and we are in a budget crunch, it makes no sense to me to go out and spend more money to develop tests. The clear question, the clear option here is to go outside the state and hire this service to be done. Then you have an open system. You have a system you can compare. You have a system that will be better calibrated year to year, so you won't have these problems. And we'll save money. So, I mean, this is a slam dunk as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Questions? Yeah. Representative Farr.
Where is the Terra Nova test, where does it originate?
It's a private company, and they contract with several states to do the state assessments. So their population that they're testing over is many millions more than they test in us. I don't know what state offhand, but they are, I think, the biggest one in the country. But there's also Stanford and Iowa Test and some others.
I have a follow-up. Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Okay, thank you. My follow-up is, now, you gave the Terra Nova test. Did you take that test, and did you align the questions to meet Oregon standards? Were you required to do that as a charter school?
No, we used it. Franklin School is a school built around the core knowledge, which is a set of, it's kind of like the Oregon standards, Oregon benchmarks, only as it turns out, I think the previous speaker, Keita Tom, did a side-by-side comparison, and actually the core knowledge curriculum is a little above, a little beyond in its expectations of where kids should be than the Oregon State benchmarks. So again, neither test is really designed for the core knowledge curriculum, and that's fine. But I've talked to some Terra Nova folks, and they said that for some additional money, they can tailor the test to Oregon standards if that's what you want. But it'll still cost you a lot less.
Follow up.
It may not necessarily be what we want, but federal law requires us to do that.
Right. And in the case of the Terra Nova, because it's done in other states, I see no problem getting satisfying federal law with it. Mm-hmm. And for that matter, Stanford or Iowa.
Well, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make a statement for the record that the federal law just requires each state to align the test to meet their own standards.
Right.
And the state gets approval from the federal government. So
exactly, yeah. So it kind of has to work hand in hand.
Mutual working relationship. Seeing no additional question here, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, because we do have one bill following, I'm going to narrow the time frame on that. And I have 7 people to testify, which means I've divided your time to approximately 5 minutes each. And I hope that will... It's probably less than adequate. And I know, it's going to just kill some of you. But we'll have another public hearing on this, so we'll flesh this out. I would like Bob Wilner, Pat Burke, Don Kosky, please. Your meter's running. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Doug Kosky. I'm assistant superintendent. I just promoted myself to the Oregon Department of Education.
We'll keep that here. What's said here stays here.
Thank you. I am here to speak in opposition to the current language of House Bill 3162 as it relates to the assessment system. Just as a broad overview, I think there are 2 points of the bill. It has an impact, or it references removing all types of references, specifically criterion references, testing to the type of assessments to be used to measure student achievement. And 2, it directs the department to contract with an independent organization to create an assessment system that complies with the requirements of the federal No Child Left Behind Act. So I've been in front of a couple of committees in the past, and I believe I got a brief chance to talk to House Ed in terms of this topic, but I've spent the majority of my time in front of House Audits and outlining the costs, delineating the costs. So I've provided you with some snippet of the materials I've provided to House Audits Committee, and I'd like to elaborate a little bit on that report because I believe that was kind of the genesis of 3162. First of all, ODE welcomed the input of House Audits in looking at our system. I think it was refreshing to take a clear look. It certainly gave me a different perspective, as I am new to the assessment system and looking at ways that we could improve. I believe the superintendent, Superintendent Castillo, had actually pushed us in the direction of making some changes in advance through her reorganization, through the hiring of an internal auditor, and by allowing me to utilize the internal audit as part of my office reorganization. And there's some other things that are going on that are consistent with what the audit report pointed out. One is, and many of the speakers have talked to things about the standards of assessment and the technical reliability and security of this system. We are in the process of going through a federal compliance review with respect to the technical adequacy of our system. This review is consistent with national standards, and we will present our body of evidence to the federal U.S. Department of Education this fall sometime. The next piece is we were already in the process. We had issued a request for information. We are very interested in partnering with external vendors and the outside community to find ways that can help us improve and enhance our existing assessment system. So based on that information, I want to point out that a changing from the existing system to an outsourcing arrangement may actually be more expensive. We don't know what it's going to cost yet. Two, if we change systems, districts are going to incur an additional cost as well. I haven't heard much from districts lately, but I do know that they have built infrastructure at the district level to provide resources down to the classroom. If we modify the system of delivery and the underlying components, those systems will also have to be tweaked. District reports, processes for teachers, the technical infrastructure, and I'm not saying that all 200 districts have provided these resources. They haven't, but some have done that. I am concerned with some of the statements in the news articles. There's been misstatements of facts that I'd like to bring to the table based on the House Audits Committee. Recent releases have indicated that the state could save, the Department of Education could save $38 million in the administration of assessments. That's technically not correct. We would have spent this year $19 million. We didn't spend that total amount because we did table the math problem solving tests, which saved us $1.2 million. There were some, and I just want to briefly touch on the $38 million cost. Those costs were based on 18 districts' self-reported, unaudited data. And they didn't really appear to be a statistical valid sampling, so we made a quantum leap from what it costs to what the enterprise is paying for these. I've provided Appendix B, which indicates that currently we spend $72 per item to develop items. Last year we had 17,000 items in the pool. At the beginning, after we went through all of the analysis and review, we ended up with 13,000, total cost of about $1 million. That's $72 per item to develop. From a testing contractor perspective, that's a very low cost. And I'll be happy to challenge and use that as a metric as we develop our RFP, a request for proposal, as a guideline in terms of where we're at. Appendix C identifies the various types of the 1.1 million tests that we deliver to students on an annual basis. This document is helpful because it'll establish the baseline requirements for the request for proposal so that we do get an apples and oranges comparison when we go out to bid externally, and we fully intend to do that. And then finally, Appendix D indicates the vendors that we do currently contract with, basically outsource. We have a number of contracts. Three-fourths of our work is already outsourced to various entities. So in conclusion, if the goal of this bill is to save money, we would suggest language directing the department to develop an RFP, allowing us to bid on the system as well as external contractors or various components, and report the results back to an interim committee. It might not be the best, it may not make great business sense to just limit our options to outsourcing the whole thing. Thank you.
Next. No, 5 minutes, clock's running.
Madam Chair, good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Pat Burke. I'm the Chief Policy Officer for the Department of Education. Madam Chair, I saw you look my way, so I promise to be brief.
I love your elaborate presentation.
Point that I want to make truly will be very brief. I've testified before the committee before. We are very interested in continuing to work with the committee on this issue. We recognize and have testified that there are areas that the current system can and will be improved. As you heard from my colleague, we are already heavily engaged on making improvements in the system. So I just wanted, for the record again, to say that we think the way through this is to put this into a long-range interim planning process. There is a lot of analysis of the current system that needs to be done, not the least of which is nailing down more of the cost information, as Mr. Kosky just mentioned, as well as some of the more technical issues. For example, No Child Left Behind now requires annual testing every grade from third through eighth, as well as science assessments in place by 2007. The state of Oregon already complies with these two elements of the law. We are testing this year, every grade, third grade through eighth grade, and the science assessment is done and in place. So in order to remain in compliance with federal law, we would have to determine if an off-the-shelf or external assessment can be aligned to Oregon standards at each grade level. We've already done the standards development. They're out in classrooms. And so there's a lot of work. So I'm concerned about the current language that says a July 1, 2005 timeline. There is simply not time between now and July 1 to do the amount of work that would be implied by this legislation. So some type of interim planning process with full sets of recommendations fully researched and developed for the 07 session is our recommendation to the committee. Secondly, in 1996, when we first administered the reading assessment, 70% of Oregon third graders met our reading standard. Last year, that number was 82%. At the same time, 52% of our students in 1996 met our state's math standards. That number last year was 81%. My point is that we have good standards that are applied to Oregon classrooms. I've presented to the committee a more in-depth analysis of all of our data. We are seeing progress of our students in Oregon classrooms on Oregon standards. And teachers have spent a lot of time since 1996 to the present working on bringing standards into their lesson planning and into the instruction that they deliver. Finally, the bill calls for a system that fully aligns with No Child Left Behind. I strongly support that. As I've testified before, we have about $400 million of No Child Left Behind funds total during the biennium. So the issue then is, what does that mean? And what that means is that the federal law requires each state to establish a set of state academic content standards. Each state is required to have an assessment system of those standards, and each state is to report results using what the federal law calls an item analysis. And the technical term for that is a criterion reference that allows people to understand whether or not the student has met the standard based on the results of the assessment. That therefore requires an alignment of the assessment to the standard, and that is work that would need to be accomplished in order to meet the requirements of this bill. Doing that before July 1st is technically not possible, and it would take a longer period of time to do that work. So, Madam Chair, I'll stop there. I want to say again, we look forward to continuing to work with the committee on these issues, and our basic recommendation is that the committee consider a interim planning process to resolve these issues and to have a set of recommendations for the 07 session.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. I will just give you a very quick response, and it is not the consensus of this committee, and I speak solely for myself. I am anxious that we do something this session, whether that is extend the date for implementation, but to push it off into another session I think defers the question. So I'm anxious that we address this policy area, and I hope that we will be working collaboratively to make that happen.
Madam Chair, we certainly agree with that and recognize that there are a variety of policy issues that we do need to continue to work on. I'm not at all suggesting that we not do anything between now and 07. There is a great deal of work that needs to be done, and would welcome the opportunity to work with you on
that. And I look forward to that. Mr. Wilner.
Well, I had prepared a statement that I think does not really fit this discussion. Let me just summarize briefly the points I hope I could make. I think the discussion is headed in the direction that I hope it would head in, that the emphasis is on finding a positive solution, not just doing away with something. In that connection, I will cite my experience in the Foreign Service, when on several occasions my job involved reading a lot of Soviet propaganda or propaganda from their allies. And the thing that struck you after a period of time was how negative it all was. They were very clear on who their enemies were, what they were trying to do away with. Very weak on the subject of positive goals. And I think that was one of the reasons, the main reason the system collapsed. And I think we have to keep that in mind and make sure we have some positive goals, which are much harder to define and much harder to achieve. It's a lot easier to burn down a house than build a new one. A lot easier to cut down a tree than to grow a new one. But I think in education, we're involved in growing trees, not making paper. We use it. Let me just pass on one odd observation from my father, who was an accidental observer of the Russian Revolution. He was a prisoner of war in Siberia, Austrian. And he said that his overriding conclusion from that was how much Russia was weakened by the fact that its people were so illiterate and ill-educated. And when the system, was really challenged by a major war, it collapsed. There weren't people around who could take on responsibility that were prepared to. And so the first organization that came along with a plan was accepted, and that happened to be the communists. That was an important lesson, he thought, for us in this country. And that is why I'm so passionate on the subject of education for citizenship. And I keep wondering if we can't acknowledge that as a key element. But the essential thing is, I think that we keep moving in a positive direction to find solutions, and not think we're solving a problem just by doing away with something.
Absolutely, I would concur with you. Are there any questions for Mr. Wilson? Thank you. And I'm sorry, I did not mean to short circuit that there would be questions for Mr. Costa or Dr. Burke. So you didn't have to fly away. Question?
Just one. Either Dr. Both? Burke or Dr. Both of, I noticed that neither one of you. Come on up. Madam Chair.
Representative Dahlem.
The question, I guess, is directed to either one of you. I noticed that you spent your allocated time with assessment and did not address SIM and CAM. Should I draw some conclusions from that, or would you like to explain your position on SIM and CAM?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, I think I've told the committees before that I'm a policy agnostic. I'm an implementer of systems, so I stand back and let the policy people make those decisions.
Thank you. Agnostic.
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, these issues are all interrelated. I do, in my look at this, I believe there is a difference between a good assessment system and something called the Certificate of Initial Mastery and the Certificate of Advanced Mastery. And it's one of the reasons that I recommend a more in-depth conversation about this. For example, I believe the committee has heard testimony from a variety of schools around the state that are really doing exemplary work. The Center for Advanced Learning in Gresham-Barlow, for example, is a charter school that cuts across or serves four different school districts in a highly successful program. The Center for Applied Learning in Canby is another example. Saban Occupational Skills Center in the North Clackamas District is another example. There are some outstanding programs, and I believe you've heard testimony from FFA students and other students engaged in student leadership issues. So there is a difference between whether or not we could find exemplary practices and the problem or the challenge of certifying 47,000 students for a certificate of advanced mastery by the end of their 4 years of high school. That is a vastly more complex question. And what we have been discussing is what are the policy implications for not only SIM and CAM, if you look at high schools along the lines of an integrated system of K-12 community colleges and universities. Within that context, Representative Dahlem, we are looking at the structure of the certificates of initial and advanced mastery. For example, you will hear a bill today that addresses the high school graduation requirements. It is a bill that we support. If you add to the graduation requirements an additional year of mathematics, then you create a policy dilemma, in my view. The current SIM system says that we would begin testing our students in February of their sophomore year, but we would have a mandatory instructional program of 3 years. So rather than, from a policy perspective, say that you're going to test the achievement of your goals halfway through instruction, it makes more sense to me to look at moving the assessment system to a period after most of the instruction has been provided. Now, if you make that change and you were to discuss putting the assessment system in the junior year, that then has implications for what does the term initial mastery mean and what does the term advanced mastery mean. And so what we've put on the table is we need to talk about this and begin to rethink what we mean by initial mastery and advanced mastery. It may be that it makes more sense to talk about general academic readiness for all Oregon high school students and be clear about what we mean by that and how we measure it, and then that we, as this body in the last session, made changes in the Certificate of Initial Mastery as part of House Bill 2744 that separated out some elements of the Certificate of Initial Mastery into voluntary endorsements. So it might be that some element along that line of thinking would be applied to the existing system. So what I'm saying, Representative Dahlem, is that those issues are open for discussion and that we are having those conversations both internally and with this body, and we think that that needs to continue.
One follow-up.
One short follow-up.
How long have we been in the process of defining SIM and CAM?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, it's a very good question, and unfortunately it's sort of a moving target, as you know from your own experience. The Certificate of Advanced Mastery and the Certificate of Initial Mastery first appeared in legislation in 1991, but as I've testified before the committee before, the Certificate of Initial Mastery has gone through repeated changes. It was most of the major structural changes happened in the 1995 session, where the existing set of standards, there were two. One set were called core applications for living, and the other set of standards were called foundation skills. The Oregon legislature in 1995 threw those out and directed the department to create academic content standards. The following year is when the current assessment system or the testing system went into effect. But the Certificate of Advanced Mastery has also undergone some basic changes, but the basic idea of a career pathway or putting learning into a context of application with students being able to apply their learning in a real manner through projects and other activities, that has been around since 1991.
One more.
Okay.
With this 14 years in defining SIM and CAM, and Oregon establishing, by the way, I moved here because of the Oregon Education Act. How many other states have copied our SIM and CAM and inculcated it into their educational system?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, I'm not sure I can answer that. I know that we get a lot of questions about it, and I my only source of information on that would have to go back to the board retreat of 2 years ago in August, when representatives from different, mostly university people and researchers on education change, visited the state. What they told us was that the Certificate of Advanced Mastery was fairly unique around the United States, and that, that every student would have some opportunity to apply their learning in a real setting. The Certificate of Initial Mastery is quite common. Every state in the United States now has some form of state assessment system, benchmarking, and exit outcomes.
You know, it's taken 14 years to have this discussion every session, so we're going to have another public hearing so we can continue to define what initial mastery and advanced mastery might be, although, and that's in order to help flesh it out a little bit, and I do not say that facetiously. We will have another discussion about this. So, Representative Roland.
Just mostly a comment. I have to keep reminding ourselves, because we seem to take go to the Department of Ed for having made this, and the reality is it was the legislature.
Well, the reality is
we have seen the enemy in the era. Previously.
I think there's shared blame to be had, but nonetheless, I will just quickly ask, because we are usurping the time for the four remaining so that we can move on to the bill that you had referenced. The CAM implementation is deferred until 2008.
That's correct.
Presuming it survives.
That is correct.
Now, I understand you have some statistics soon to be coming forward, or perhaps you have them now but they're not yet posted, on the number of students or the percentage of students who have received their SIM.
That's correct.
Certificate of Initial Mastery. Do you have those numbers? Because at the last...
I don't.
The last 2002-03 that you had posted, they were at what percentage?
It's about a third, 29%.
About 29%. And that's up from what it had been.
That's up from what it, without question, the Certificate of Initial Mastery, and that's why I make a distinction between the SIM and an assessment system. The Certificate of Initial Mastery requires that students to earn a SIM must meet all state academic standards in English, math, and science. So it is a very rigorous assessment or a rigorous process. The number of kids meeting that right now stands at about a third. We will release the most recent data on Monday, I believe, is what the due date. I don't have it. I haven't seen it yet. Next Monday is when it's going to go out. But right now it stands at about a third. And, Madam Chair, that highlights another concern of ours, and that is that at the high school level, and I know we'll talk about this more under 3129, we have some basic issues about what is the level of instruction that all of our high school students are receiving and how well are they doing, and are we closing the achievement gap in the core academic areas? And we do believe that that's a priority for attention both from the legislature and from us.
Well, thank you very much for that comment, because I think that is the goal that we look at. And Mr. Koski, you had made a comment about if the goal is simply to save money. I think that's a mutual goal, but I think the service to our children and the generations that may not have been well served into the future is the primary concern, and the achievement gap that everyone is concerned about is a focus as well. So it is a with a price tag.
Sure.
And beyond dollars.
Thank you.
Now I know I have a time problem. Mr. Keller is reminding me here. Donna McCann, Catherine Stetson, and then we'll wind up following them. Catherine, I'm sorry very much. If you would like to and then we'll have Rob Kramer and Harvey Matthews, so you're on deck.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kathy Stetson, and I work for Northwest Evaluation Association, known as NWEA. We are a not-for-profit assessment provider. We currently work with 1,500 school districts around the United States, and that's in 43 states where we have aligned state assessment, or we have aligned assessments for districts to use to help monitor progress over time and do comparisons with their performance on their state assessments.
I happen to manage the statewide assessment for Idaho. I work with a director of assessment, an administrative assistant, and the NAEP director in Idaho. And we work directly with school districts as we provide the statewide assessment to the 250,000 students that are in that state. We're in Lake Oswego, so we're a local organization. We've been around for 30 years. We currently work with school districts here in the state to help provide ongoing monitoring or formative assessments in relationship to the state standards. We have a state-aligned version. I'm here actually to speak to the assessment aspect of this bill and to actually have the committee consider the fact that Oregon does provide an excellent assessment system for the students in the state. Our organization believes it's second most to the one that's provided in Idaho, but the things that are important that I would want you to consider as you're moving ahead, if you do direct the department to go to an outside agency, to try to maintain the quality aspects that are in the current assessment system, and those would be accuracy for students. Most off-the-shelf publishers provide on-grade level assessments. They're fixed form tests that just measure, actually measure fairly accurately students in the middle of the group. But the assessment systems that Oregon does provide, and our organization also provides a broader-based assessment system, a leveled system that gets the high-end students and the low-end students and gives you a much more accurate assessment of the students so that you can inform instruction. The other thing that is important if you were to direct them to create an RFP would be to make sure that results are coming in a timely manner. If instruction needs to change, teachers cannot wait for the data. So the TESA system that's in place does provide immediate feedback to the teachers who are going to make a difference. Many off-the-shelf assessment systems as well do not provide timely results. Results can come in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and by then people have moved on and they're guessing as to what they need to do to actually improve the instruction. The other aspect that needs to be in place is that it has to be useful. Teachers have to believe that the data that they're getting is accurate, reliable, and can tell them something about what the children need to know. If it doesn't come in a way that's easy for them to understand, they're going to not use that data as they're trying to make adjustments in the classroom. And many times then they will go back to just teaching the way that they've taught and meeting the needs of the children as best they can. Another issue is that they need to be able to measure growth over time. If you really want truly accurate information about children and what's happening in the classroom, you can't just take a point in time look at them and say, this is where our kids are. You need to say, well, if this is the bar that they need to get over, where are they in relationship to that? How much growth do we actually have to make in those students by focusing instruction to get them over the bar and to excel in their growth? So those are four aspects. And the last one would be multiple times to assess students. If you merely meet the spirit of the requirements of No Child Left Behind, you're going to be selling the students short. We have very high standards here in the state. And for students to be able to get to the percentage that they need to get to get to a SIM at the 10th grade level, it's a very high standard. And teachers need to be able to monitor how students are doing in relationship to that as they're moving ahead. We did respond to an RFI that the State Department put out, and I think that that information about how much our assessments would cost in comparison. What you need to know is that our assessments and what we provided in the RFI cross many divisions of the State Department, not just the assessment division, because one of the components that we feel is important is that you have strong staff development. That falls under school improvement division. Certainly, as many of the things that the State Department provides and are funded under the technology division that we have put into those kinds of things. So when the RFP is created, it needs to be very specific as to what components would be wanted to maintain, and then look at the comparison as to where those services are actually provided in the state. I think that's about all.
You did well. thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Stetson? And I'm sure that she'd be willing to come back at our future public hearing, Representative Farr.
I just have a question, and you may not have this with you. You could provide it for the committee at a later time. But do you have any idea how much your test would cost in relation to what Oregon is currently paying for assessment tests.
Well, I think that's what I was trying to share with you, is that in our costs that we've shared with the RFI, our kind of low end was about $5.5 million, and that is a subset of the services that are provided by the State Department. The state not only does multiple choice assessment, but as you know, they did have the math problem solving, and they've got the reading. And then they do special ed services and all kinds of other tests. They have a brand new LEP test that's coming online. So those are not all the things that we provide. Our assessment would provide multiple choice, math, reading, language usage, and science. We partner with other school with another organization to provide open-ended math assessments or reading assessments or writing assessments. So you have to really look at all the finite components to really do a comparison. A high end, if we were to provide a good portion of what's provided, would be $11.5 million, I think.
Could I just follow up really quick?
Follow up?
What does Idaho pay per test?
I don't have that actual per student on my mind right now. We test about 177,000 students two times by contract, by mandate, and then they test at least another time. About maybe two-thirds of the school districts test another time. Mm-hmm. That's all provided in the services. And we provide math, reading, and language usage, but we provide all the training that's associated with that.
If I gave you my card, could you get me that information?
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, how about if we provide that through Mr. Keller for the committee?
How would that be, Mr. Keller?
How about that?
But again, what I'd like to, I'm not here trying to represent our organization as being the provider for this.
We're trying to get a parameter.
Right. And I think that you really need to be really looking at all the components, because the State Department does provide much more in different areas than what we would provide. So it's not just a one-to-one kind of look.
Thank you. And I know you have more to tell us. Now, Mr. Kramer, Mr. Matthews, would you like to come forward and present today or at our next public hearing? You, as long as you can streamline it, maybe give us a out of the chute. It's your choice. You can both have 30 seconds. And that was generous. Jim said 15.
I'll submit some written testimony to that end, but I would enjoy the opportunity to come back. And if there's a work group held, I would love to be a part of that. For the record, my name is Harvey Matthews with Associated Oregon Industries. Associated Oregon Industries represents 23,000 businesses. Those businesses employ over 325,000 private employees here in Oregon, and we have a strong interest and the quality of our educational workforce. We have a long history of supporting public education, and we did support the 21st Century Act for many reasons. It had a measurable and lofty goal. It had parents, teachers, and community members involved with its implementation. It had the goal of lowering the dropout rate, which at that time and still currently is too high. There was increased accountability with report cards, district-wide report cards. There was an important connection made between pre-K and K-12, something we're still wrestling with, and several other important elements of that. I would still say that we do support SIM and CAM, but I have some suggestions for how to make changes, and I'll submit those in this testimony as well. I think obviously the testing is an issue. You've heard this from multiple sources, but we do need an assessment system that informs students and teachers about the needed changes to their instruction during the academic year. I visited NWEA during the summer and looked at their tests, and basically what they provide is a pre-test, post-test scenario. When I first started teaching in 1993 as a 21-year-old, I remember talking to Leroy Dials, 64-year-old social studies teacher. He said, "Harvey, you're going to be in charge of this SIM-CAM stuff because I got a feeling that legislature is going to do away with this here shortly." And it wasn't long before we started talking about that. Leroy had seen a lot of testing and a lot of other issues come out of the legislature directing teachers what to do, and seen them go often. I think there is a core element of SIM and CAM that the legislature as a body needs to protect. We need to protect it not just because it's something that was passed previously, but to protect the body of the legislature's I'm struggling with a word here.
If you're going for legacy or credibility,
I'm going for credibility, honestly. I think your credibility needs to be focused on affecting change in this and not necessarily doing away with it, because teachers like Leroy will say, yeah, look, there they go again. They don't care if they're who's Democrat or Republican controlled or whatnot. They look at you as a body. So the testing, obviously, I think should be looked at. It could be improved, and we need to ensure quality, lower costs, and improved turnaround time for parents, students, and teachers. I think work samples are something that needs to be looked at. We have, I don't think they're necessary. They've proven to be cumbersome. In 93, when I first started, there were all these promises about digitizing everything and having it be a seamless system, and that has never come about. So I'd say it would be appropriate to let them go the way of the dinosaur. And I would also encourage one other thing is scholarships. There's an idea brought forward by the State Board of Higher Education that says, well, you know, we have this SIN. Let's attach some scholarships for low-income students to make that a worthwhile goal. And I would say those three things. If we change testing, work samples, and scholarships, I think most parents and students would see you'd see their point of view, their perspective change about not only the legislature and their ability to handle change in the education system, but also the importance of the 21st Century Act. So with that, thank you very much for your time. And again, if there is a work group associated with looking at this, I would love to be a part of it.
And we'll certainly keep that in mind. Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks very much for the opportunity to address you on this issue. My name is Rob Kramer. I'm the president of the Oregon Education Coalition. I've been working on this issue for many years. I don't think I have a lot of things to add about the flaws of our current assessment system and SIM and CAM that hasn't already been said far more eloquently by parents and teachers, educators, and other professionals that you've heard from today. So I'm not going to talk at all about the many ways in which I think that this system is flawed. I would like to talk about where we go from here. The bill before you says that the state shall contract with an independent testing company to devise a system of tests that works for Oregon. What might that look like? I want to kind of buttress some points being made by Harvey Matthews and by the representative from NWEA in that we need a system in Oregon that is what would be called a value-added assessment system. Our current assessment system is essentially called a status-based accountability system. That is, we measure kids in third grade and compare them to the last year's third grade cohort. That is not a valid way to get good accountability data. We need to be measuring kids based on where those individual children were in the last year. And as a representative from NWEA said, and looking to how much value added each year a child needs if we are going to get that child up to meeting or exceeding standards. Now, there are models in other states where this has been implemented and done very, very well. Tennessee was the first state to have a value-added assessment system for its statewide assessment system. I have sat down with Bill Sanders, who is the creator of that system, now works for an organization called SAS International, and he assists states and other school districts in implementing their own value-added system. It is very, very profound and robust what you can do with a value-added assessment system. The NWEA has its own value-added assessment system model, and I'm going to be handing out executive summary of a study the NWEA just did on a value-added assessment system. Now, one of the people providing testimony here today said, well, we can't just throw something out. That's not what we should be about. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. If we're going to replace our system of assessments, let's put one in place that gives us the data that we need. Right now, you could have a sixth grader come to a class and have second grade reading skills. By the eighth grade, that sixth grader could have seventh grade reading skills and take the eighth grade reading test, and the school would be deemed a failure for that child. Is that school a failure? Now, on the flip side of that, you could have a sixth grader with eighth grade reading skills, and by the eighth grade, he hasn't progressed at all, still has eighth grade reading skills, and we test him in the eighth grade, and he meets standard. Is that school a success? Well, our current system of accountability calls that first school a failure and the second school a success. That's wrong. It's giving us bad data. Now, with No Child Left Behind, we are making very profound decisions based on that data. Decisions to break apart schools. Decisions to send kids to other schools. Accountability consequences based on flawed data. This status-based assessment system will not work. It doesn't work for what we need. We have to have a value-added assessment system. Luckily, we don't have to be on the forefront of that. Other states have already done it. Colorado is looking at it now. Oregon can do it, too. This is the golden opportunity, and I want to urge you that now is not the time to put this question into a long-range interim planning process. It's time to do it now. We have heard from lots of people who are affected by the system generally say it's not working. The people who stand up and defend it are the people who built it. You would expect that. And I think the decision for this committee and this body is, who are you going to stand with this session? Thank you very much.
Thank you. 1 minute worth of questions, if you dare. Okay. Realize it. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, we will be revisiting this. Representative March, did you wish to distribute some Dash 1 amendments?
If you would like them, I would be happy to distribute them for people's consideration.
Why don't you distribute them for our consideration as we go forward into yet another week
iteration of
studying this particular issue. And as I mentioned, I will be bringing forward some amendments as well, which would probably appear as dash twos.
Well, I'm working on the dash 23s now.
Okay, then I'll have you one.
So, do they number them for us? Because mine are in already. No. Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm closing the public hearing on the House 3162. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3129. Representative Lim.
Oh, yes.
No, I thought
thanks.
It came from Mark. I don't know who it came from. Thank you. That's a good thing.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to thank you again for sharing here. Before I begin, I just want to show you the April 5 Metro section here. Education Department tells lawmakers that the Oregon lacks enough math teachers to raise the bar for the high school diploma, and written by the Steve Carter, Oregonian, at the heading said, Oregon Department of Education on Monday opposed the measure to raise high school graduation requirement next year. And I don't believe, in my opinion, that is an accurate statement. As a matter of fact, that the Oregon Department of Education in support of this bill, but they expressed concern on the funding for requiring of additional requirement. So I just want to the state to correct the record as far as I'm concerned. All right. House Bill 3129 has been amended after having worked with the Oregon Department of Education. There is now an opt-out clause that will allow local school districts to award a diploma if a student meets math and English proficiency as defined by the State Board of Education and the local boards. The Second Amendment triggers the implementation so that the English mandate will begin July 1st, 2007, and the math mandate will begin on July 1st, 2008. According to state law, Oregon high school students are only required to take 2 years of math and 3 years of English. This is one of the lowest standards in the country. House Bill 3129 will increase the math and English requirements to 3 years of math and four years of English so that we come to par with most other states. Leaders of 13 states, including our own Governor Kulongoski, attended the National Governors Association Conference concerning the standards of U.S. high school performance. Governor Kulongoski promised Oregon will raise the bar for high school students. Do you need to go going on? I think you heard this story ahead. I don't think I will repeat my testimony again. But as you see, the amendment is in your hand. I hope you pass this amendment. Hopefully, I'd like to discuss your possibility of working out today to hopefully pass out.
Thank you, Representative Lim. We do have some signed up to give testimony on the bill as well, so we'll complete that portion.
Okay.
And then what we'll probably do, Representative Lim, and certainly to accommodate your schedule, is we will move this to a work session to see if we can adopt the Dash 1 amendments and then wait for a fiscal. And then I would direct Mr. Keller to, upon arrival of that fiscal statement, we will return it to the committee for action at that point.
Thank you very much, and I thank you very much for the consideration. I think that's the right approach. Since the time is the essence, as soon as I come back from Korea, I'd like to have a work session and hopefully pass it. And then since time is closing out, and I hope that we have enough time to pass in the Senate also.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Deb Andrews and Margaret DeLacy. And I hate to even say it, but if we can condense our comments, and it would be very helpful.
Yes,
I
will.
Sure.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Margaret DeLacy. I'm a Portland School District parent. I'm here testifying as a parent. And I came before your committee last week and expressed some serious concerns about the bill. Representative Lim has his office faxed me a copy of the amendments yesterday. I believe we're talking about the same amendments. I haven't seen them back there to compare them, but based on his testimony, I'm happy to say that I'm satisfied. I think that this bill will accomplish our mutual goal of increasing standards without wasting student time and effort unnecessarily. So I would urge you to go ahead and support the bill. I've been here all afternoon and listening to the testimony on the previous bill. I'd also like to add that TAG students are defined by the test that you've been talking about all day. We have some very serious testing issues, some of them specific to our community, some of them not, and we would really appreciate a place at the table when changes to the testing system are discussed, possibly through a TAG advisory committee, which I've also discussed before this committee before and has not been implemented as far as I know.
Thank you. We'll certainly take that into consideration. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Andrews.
Chairman Flores, members of the committee, and especially Representative Lim, I came here before to testify about HB 3129. I'm here today to thank you very much for this amendment that addresses student learning and options for students. I appreciate that very much. Earlier today, someone said changes seem to be afoot. I agree. This amendment for this bill confirms changes are afoot, and I thank you for that.
Thank you very much. Angela Thompson for Representative Nelson.
No questions?
I'm sorry. Were there questions?
No.
No questions.
Thank you very much, ladies. But we'll be talking.
John wanted to, but we said.
Hey. Oh.
It's like pushing your cue button.
I'm sitting here. Hello. Thinking about dinner. If you want to know the
GPS on Emerson. Thank you.
Just trying to help, John.
Thank you. For the record.
For the record, I am Angela Thompson with Representative Nelson's office, and I'm here to read her testimony. Chair Flores, distinguished committee members, I thank you for the consideration today of House Bill 3129, a truly important bill for Oregon's children and the future. We live in an increasingly technical society. In order to succeed in business and in life, children today, more than ever, need a solid foundation in mathematics. Mathematics is the core of learning for science, medicine, engineering, computer science, accounting, and economics.
Ms. Thompson, I'm sorry. Thank you very much for providing the written testimony. Would you like to condense the comments, and then we could go ahead and review it at your convenience, because we do have it submitted now for the record.
Okay.
Would you like to condense and summarize? You can read the last paragraph. How about that?
How's that sound?
Okay.
And yet Oregon has fallen behind the rest of the nation in requiring high school students to complete adequate levels of coursework in mathematics and English to graduate. A majority of states, 29 plus District of Columbia, currently require high school students to complete 3 or more years of mathematics. Oregon does not. A majority of states, 36 plus the District of Columbia, currently require high school students to complete 4 years of English. Oregon does not. We must not allow Oregon's students to fall behind the rest of the nations in these fundamental areas. If we do, we let down not only our children, but our future. If other states graduate students better prepared to meet the challenges of the future, then Oregon will lose out economically and socially as we fall further behind in job growth and quality of life. Chair Flores, distinguished committee members, I urge you to pass House Bill 3129, requiring 3 years of high school mathematics and 4 years of high school English. On to the full House of Representatives. We owe it to our children. We need it for our future.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Were there any questions for Ms. Thompson? Thank you. Dr. Burke?
That's it.
You did good.
You did. I knew all you guys' faces.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pat Burke, Chief Policy Officer of the Department of Education, here to speak in favor of the Dash 1 amendments to 3129 and express our appreciation not only to Representative Lim for his leadership in the bill, but to his staff for working with us on the amendments, and for the clarification, which I did not know Representative Lim was going to do, and I appreciate the clarification on the record of the position of the department when the bill was first heard by committee. I did not intend and apologize if I led the committee to conclude that we were opposed to increasing the standard. We are not. We were concerned about timeline and cost and the implementation. These Dash 1 amendments address those issues, and we are very appreciative. I also have talked with a number of stakeholders including teacher organizations, and we've talked with a variety of superintendents and others, and I think there's a consensus that now is the time to move ahead with these increases. This is a workable timeline. It gives us an opportunity to ramp up on terms of recruiting the teachers that we will need to recruit to find the new particularly new math teachers, and to give give our high schools an opportunity to adjust their schedules so that we can begin to build the master course schedules that would contain these new requirements, and to give our students plenty of advance notice as they plan their high school programs what those requirements are going to be. So thank you, Madam Chair and Committee and Representative Lim, and we endorse the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Lim.
Thank you very much for testifying. And the concerns I have, many others have, is that the cost. And then do you have any idea how much it's going to cost? Do we need that cost at this biennium, or could we cost defer until the next biennium?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, I believe the answer is that we can cost defer until the next biennium because of the timelines that are in the Dash 1 amendments. But the importance of the Dash 1 amendments is that it signals both districts and the university system that we will be in the market for adding new math teachers and English teachers to the system. We have done some very preliminary cost analysis. I would hesitate right now even to submit it to the committee because I think the numbers need to be refined further. We know, for example, that about 56% of Oregon high school graduates take the SAT exam, and we know from that information that about 80% of the students taking the SAT exam have had 3 years of mathematics. Now, so that leaves 20% of that population that has not had 3 years of mathematics, but it also leaves 40% of all high school students that we really don't know very much about. So we need to get deeper into that data to find out really how many more students need to take the additional math. And we will be able to do that during the interim, and I think we will have very clear numbers by the 07 session.
Okay. Follow up, Madam Chair.
Representative Lim.
Okay. And then this implementation in the 2007 and 2008, and even you mentioned that that cost will be deferred until that time, but what I heard that we begin to hire the English teachers and math teachers this biennium, then it might be additional cost. Can you do it without additional funding, or what? How could we handle the situation?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, that's probably something that I would want to spend more time with the data on. I think a couple of things will happen. Were this to become law, you will signal to school districts a time specific that they need to have the additional capacity. That would lead me to conclude that beginning right away, people will start analyzing their existing teacher workforce and begin looking down the road. The part of the issue would be the assumptions as I do that planning on things like what standard class size am I looking for, because that would have a very clear implication on how many new teachers I need to hire. Secondly, I would need to have conversation with the state board about changes in administrative rule. The current administrative rule for high school graduation requirements require 22 units of credit. The administrative rule would need to be expanded to include 24 units of credit and adding a year of English and a year of math to the administrative rule. All of that work, I believe, could begin and be accomplished without major cost because it's more planning work than it is actual hiring of the teachers. However, I think as districts ramp up toward this, I think you could expect that some districts will be adding math teachers to their staff. And I say that because we have more capacity at the English level than we do at the mathematics level. So my assumption is that superintendents will be looking at increasing their math teachers probably as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I don't have a question.
Okay.
Representative Rutland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm asking this for John.
Okay. We do got a whole team.
Now, you have made an assumption because of the bill that we do need to add two extra credits,
yes,
as opposed,
sir,
to removing two electives.
Madam Chair, Representative Roman, yes, that is my assumption, and I believe that is the intent of the bill. And as I testified in my prior testimony about the bill, if this is a question of taking existing elective courses and cutting them and adding more to standard mathematics courses in particular, I believe there would be both resistance from students, parents, and the teacher workforce on that issue. And it doesn't get to the presenting issue, as Representative Lim indicated, that still leaves Oregon at among some of the lowest high school graduation requirements in the country. It's my understanding from the committee and the kind of general public consensus on this issue that we're looking at increasing the requirements for Oregon, and that's our understanding as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It is my recollection that would be my preference, that they be added rather than reduced from electives. But you had said there were 22, and when I looked at the OAR, I did 21. And was there a change in that?
No, ma'am. There should be 22. Do you know which year of OAR you
looked
at?
Well, I may have looked at an old one.
Okay.
No,
Madam Chair, it's my understanding it is 22,
okay,
and this would be an increase to 24.
Okay, great. Thank you. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3129. Thank you, Dr. Burke. We will open a work session on
I'm ready.
Bill 3129.
Madam Chair, I move the amendments to House Bill 3129.
Representative Dahlem has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 3129. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. They are adopted. And I would then direct that when this is sent down for fiscal and it returns, Mr. Kelly, you'll bring it back for us for a review for action. Okay? We'll close the work session on House Bill 3129. Have a great trip. We'll see when you get back, Representative Lim. And thank you, committee members, and thank you, participants. And we will close the House Education Committee.
You ready?
Thanks.